So today we'll be reading from Canto 7, Chapter 13, Text 37. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aniha Paritushtatma. Yadrichchopannatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahir ivasatvavan. Aniha paritushtatma. Yadrichchopannatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahid ivasatvavan. Aniha paritushtatma. Yadrichchopannatad aham. Nochech chaye bahvahani. Mahahid ivasatvavan. Prabhujis. Yadrich chopanatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahir eva sattvavan. Ani paritushtatma. Yadrich chopanatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahir ivasatvavan. Aniha paritushtatma. Yadrichchopanatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahir ivasatvavan. Matijis. Aniha paritushtatma. Yadrichchopanatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahir ivasatvavan. Aniha paritushtatma. Yadrichchopanatad aham. Nochech chaye bhavahani. Mahahid ivasatvavan. Let's look at the word for word. Aniha, with no desire to possess more. Paritushta, very satisfied. Atma, self. Yadrichcha, in its own way. Without endeavor. Upanatat, by things brought, in by possession. Aham, I, no, not. Chet, if so. Shaye, I lie down. Bahu, many. Ahani, days. Maha ahi, a python. Iva, like. Sattvavan, enduring. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. I do not endeavor to get anything, but am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python, and I lie down in this way for many days. Translation. I do not endeavor to get anything, but am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated, like a python, and I lie down in this way for many days. Srila Prabhupada's purport. One should learn detachment from the bumblebees, for they collect drops of honey here and there and keep it in their honeycomb. But then someone comes and by force takes all the honey away, leaving the bumblebees with nothing. Therefore, one should learn from the bumblebee not to keep more money than one needs. Similarly, one should learn from the python to stay in one place for many, many days without food and then eat only if something comes in its own way. Thus, the Lord Brahmana gave instructions gained from two creatures, namely the bumblebee and the python. So now I'll offer my obeisances to the Guru Parampara. Om Agyanti Vidandhasya Gnanjana Shlakaya Chakshudun Militam Vinatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobheshtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gudo Shri Uta Patakamalam Shri Gudun Vaishnavamscha Shri Dhupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvayetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Kuduna Sando Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaudangi Dadhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Site Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpadu Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here we see that Prahlad Maharaj was traveling, visiting all these various sadhus. He's going around seeing these saintly people. Narada Muni is, of course, communicating this to show us what is the quality of the Paramahamsa, someone beyond the modes of nature, someone beyond the Varnashram system, which he has so elaborately described. So this particular sadhu is engaged in what is known as python vritti, or the way that he makes his living, the way that he eats, the way he gets the things that he needs, is by following the example of the python. So this is actually, it was quite shocking to Prahlad Maharaj, because unexpectedly this sadhu, perhaps he'd heard of this sadhu, you know, who just lays there and accepts whatever food comes to him. And then when he sees him, he's actually fat, like me, right? I'm fat for different reasons. But he's actually very, very healthy, big. And so he's surprised, you know. How is it that you're like this? And we see that this sadhu is so wonderful that he's fully satisfied. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't want anything. He just lays there, totally happy. And of course, he's Krishna conscious. He's meditating upon Krishna. We can understand, you know, from our own practice, Prabhupada has given us, he's hearing and chanting, he's meditating on the pastimes of Krishna, he's absorbed in Krishna within his heart. And so this sadhu, he desires nothing in this world, he makes no endeavor outside of that, and he's fully satisfied. We could see, he even mentions himself this principle of the higher taste. He compares it to Mriga Trishna, right? We heard just a few verses ago. In fact, I'll read that verse. It says, just as a deer, because of ignorance, cannot see the water within a well covered by grass, but runs after water elsewhere, the living entity covered by the material body does not see the happiness within himself, but runs after happiness in the material world. So, the realization of this sadhu is that everything he needs is within himself. Right? He doesn't need to endeavor externally. Everyone's looking for happiness. That's the foundation. That's why we're endeavoring so hard. But he sees that happiness is within, and his endeavor is within. He's tasting the nectar of Krishna consciousness. Just like a deer may be running all over the place looking for water. He's thirsty, right? Sometimes you'll see when an animal becomes thirsty, they foam at the mouth. It creates a burning sensation in their body, very difficult. And so he's running everywhere, looking to quench that thirst. That's like us. We're running everywhere in this world, looking for anything to quench our thirst. We all have different natures. We're looking across the room. I see there's so many different bodies. You know, everyone looks so different. So these bodies, the karmic tendencies of these bodies are different. We're looking to quench our thirst in different ways. We'll have different tendencies to try to enjoy the material world in different ways. So in this way, we're running, birth after birth, looking to quench this thirst. But meanwhile, what the deer doesn't know is right under his feet, just buried under the grass, just a few inches, there's a nice well of water, pure, clean, pure water. And so similarly within us, within our own self, there's actually the happiness of the soul. It's just like a lotus flower. Have you ever seen a beautiful lotus flower? They remain closed, but when the sun shines upon them, they open up beautifully, right? Very full of luster and wonderful smell emanating from this lotus flower. So similarly, when the soul comes in contact with Krishna, automatically the lotus of the heart opens. Shri Kairava Chandrika, right? The moon of Krishna, the lotus flower opens, and immediately the happiness of the soul is awakened by association with Krishna. So this is the happiness that we're supposed to seek. And this is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we can look over this, right? Sometimes we can, but we actually have to take this very, very seriously as part of our practice. We're all born in this, most of us in this Western civilization. It's totally dedicated to sense gratification. Movies, television, cartoons, right? I mean, if you're like me, you spent your entire childhood sitting in front of a television, eating Rice Krispies, watching Sesame Street or whatever, right? The whole culture from the beginning is just to enjoy movies and television, Transformers, G.I. Joe, right? And even I said that and some eyes got really bright, wow, the sun has arisen, right? So the tendency from our very birth and from many lifetimes is to try to enjoy material sense gratification, try to absorb ourselves in topics of the material world and relish that taste, which is very meager. It can't satisfy that thirst. So in Krishna consciousness, we have to very clearly understand the importance of changing that tendency to taking pleasure only in topics of Krishna and hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, Krishna's name, his form, his pastime, service to Krishna, giving Krishna consciousness to others, right? These activities given by Srila Prabhupada, the Guru Parampara, these activities are very pleasurable. And they're meant to replace these things which we're naturally inclined to. Does that make sense? So it's very hard to make advancement in spiritual life if we don't replace our tendency to enjoy with the tendency to, with immersing ourselves in Krishna, immersing ourselves rather. We see even in the material world, there's higher and lower tastes, right? Lower taste, you'll see, some people have very low tastes. They want to enjoy very gross things, right? And people maybe on the material platform that are a little bit more subtle. Maybe they're more educated, they're more intelligent, they come from a more refined background. They take pleasure in more refined, more subtle material things. They like to read classical literature and go attend plays or theater or opera, whatever it may be, right? So devotees, we're the same way. We're meant to be very refined by the culture of Krishna consciousness. And we take pleasure in very refined things, things that are so subtle, they transcend the material energy. Krishna is the source of everything. Aham savasya pabhavo. So we actually go so subtle and so refined in our culture that we meditate on Krishna, who's the source of everything, who's beyond matter. And that, the activities on that platform, the topics on that platform, that's where we get our taste. You see? So we're meant to be very, very cultured in that way. And another aspect of this is as you meditate upon Krishna, this is very interesting. This is described in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yani dipena bhasvata, right? Krishna from within our heart, he actually burns away all the ignorance and illusion. As you become closer to Krishna, not only do you experience a higher taste, not only is your lower material tendency replaced by something much more beautiful and much more sweet, right? But as that happens, all the ignorance in your heart is destroyed. Dinami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. And then Krishna gives you the intelligence by which to come to him, meaning that your view of reality becomes very clear. You see the way Srila Prabhupada preaches in his purports and his lectures and things like that. He has no illusions about reality. Why is that? Why is Prabhupada so smart? Right? Why is it that he sees through material reality so clearly? Because he's illuminated from within by Krishna. It's just like, imagine if you had rays of light emanating from your eyes, you know. Krishna, Gyanadipena Bhasvata, is situated within our heart. He's lighting you up from within, and that light is shining out of your eyes. And with that light, you see everything clearly for what it is, right? The devotee is always looking towards Krishna. But when he looks towards Maya, when he looks towards material illusion, the illusion of separateness from Krishna, he immediately, that light blasts through that ignorance. It cuts away that darkness, and he sees clearly what that ignorance and attachment is. Right? So, we see that here this sadhu, although he's absorbed in his inner meditation, he's atmarati, he's tasting the pleasure of the self. He has no interest in material affairs. But when he looks at material affairs, he sees them clearly for what they are. He sees that they're illusions, that they're foolish, and therefore he's determined not to engage in them at all. In fact, not even, he has no attraction. You see? And it's not that he's averse. He's just detached. He simply sees it just like cold, just like a surgeon understands someone's disease. So similarly, he sees the disease of the material conditioned soul. And he mentions in this chapter many different things and describes how they're illusory. He mentions sex life. Right now, here he's mentioning attachment to money for one's sense gratification, attachment to food for one's sense gratification. These things are very dear to the conditioned soul. Conditioned soul is always meditating. Food, food, food. You know, when am I going to eat this? Where do I eat that? Right? Driving down Venice Boulevard, looking at the restaurants and thinking, how am I going to make this? You know, right? This is a serious meditation. How to eat very nicely. And also, of course, sex life, money. The conditioned soul is constantly meditating. I need money, I need money, I need money, I need money, right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I need money, I need money, I need money. So it's a mrigatrishna, it's the thirst of the deer, right? That, as it said previously, money is like honey. You see, that taste of that water is so sweet for the conditioned soul, it becomes addicted and can think of nothing but that honey, right? So here, this avadut, this great personality, is describing how foolish it is to go after money. We see that basically the point he's making is that it's plundered no matter what. This is something that we should understand as devotees, or even just anybody should understand this, that whatever money you're accumulating, someone is going to take it from you. And in our society today, that's primarily the government, right? You have this big, powerful, you know, federal government, which takes all of your money. It takes as much as it can. And you see that you're taxed at every step, basically. It's practically as you're walking down the road, you know, oh, left foot taxed, right foot taxed, left foot taxed, right? Whatever, whenever you change, you do a transaction with money, you buy something at the store, you're taxed, right? If you want to drive a car, you're taxed for the gas, right? You have to pay for your license, you have to pay registration, you have to pay insurance, you have to, you know, you have to pay just to drive, basically. At every step, every mile, you have to pay the government just to move, right? What to speak of, you know, there's these really ridiculous taxes the government puts on people, the property tax, for example. You purchase a piece of property, you own it, right? It should belong to you. But the government doesn't care about that. They just see an opportunity to tax you. So you have to pay property tax every year, thousands of dollars. Like if you own a house, you may own it, but you still have to pay the government just to own it. Isn't that absurd? Right? You know, like basically they're just pirating your money and taking it whenever they can. And a really ridiculous one, in my opinion, is they have the death tax. Right? You're taxed just to die. Like if you want to die, you have to pay the government. It's like you want to do anything, right? And so, you know, if you, as soon as you die, say somebody saves up, you know, $100,000 and they want to give it to their children, the government steps in and says, hold on a minute, I'm going to take like, it's, I mean, 20, 30%. Like, we just cut it practically in half and we take it. I mean, what gives them the right to do that? To just take all of your money? You know, you died, so they get to take half of your money that you saved up in your life, right? Isn't that ridiculous? So the government is basically running like thieves, you know, and through the law and through the justice system, they basically forcibly take your money at every step of the way. And, you know, what's even worse is if the government's not doing it, like if somehow the government disbands or economic collapse or whatever, then there's going to be other people who will do it. But they'll take it by the point of a gun, right? So the government, you know, they have this sort of infrastructure, bureaucracy of police and things like that to withdraw your taxes. And by the way, there's so many different arguments about, you know, whether laws are just or should we enforce this law or that law. But one law the government will always enforce is your taxes. No matter who you are, no matter what the situation is, they don't care. If you don't pay your taxes, you're going to be persecuted to the fullest extent of the law, right? They're very serious about that. That's their primary concern, is to extract money from you. So, you know, they don't really care what happens to you. You know, you're walking down the street and you're raped or whatever. That's not really their main concern. Their main concern is that you pay your taxes. You might even have a rape tax. You know, you have to pay it every single thing. You want to go to court, you have to pay taxes, right? So, but if the government's not there doing it, if they don't have this kind of paramilitary institution, then the criminals, the dacoits, will come and they'll extract their tax. Right? And so in this way, at any stage, as soon as you save up money, there's people who are trying to extract it. There's people who are trying to take it from you. And it's a constant process. And this is here now. It's happening now. It happened thousands of years ago. This avadut is describing it, right? So therefore, an intelligent person doesn't make much of an endeavor to save up lots of money, right? Doesn't over-endeavor for that. I can see the example of my own father. You know, I talk to him sometimes, and he describes how, I mean, he's like in his 60s now. You know, he's getting quite older, and he wants to retire, but he can't because of health insurance. He needs health insurance. He feels he does because he has some various illnesses. So if he were to quit his job and decide to retire, he'd have no more health insurance. So if he gets sick, they'll take everything he's ever acquired in his life. He has a house, he has a car, you know, he has all these different things. He's worked, you know, 40, 50 years to build up. And just one illness, you know, it'll cost, you know, $100,000. They'll just take it. They'll force you to sell your house so that you can pay your bills. Right? They'll take everything from you just because you got sick. So therefore, he'll work to the death until he's dead just so he can have this insurance, just to protect himself from other people who want to grab what he has. Right? So it's a very disturbing situation. And I described to him, you know, my experience that it's a lot easier if you don't have anything. You know, this is the way society works. If you have nothing, there's nothing for them to take. Right? You actually live more comfortably. You know, you can go to Venice Family Clinic or whatever. You actually live more comfortably and there's not a problem if you have nothing. But as soon as you have something, they'll take it all. So this is basically what this Brahman is describing here, that it's better to live very simply. It's better not to become entangled in this sort of thing. Okay? Now, also another thing he's mentioning here is that one should be like a python, meaning in terms of eating, that one shouldn't run here and there trying to satisfy the tongue. Rather, one should be satisfied with whatever is provided by Providence or Krishna. Right? So how does this apply in our life? Well, I mean, for a devotee, the best thing is to be satisfied with whatever Krishna provides, say, for example, in the temple. There's, you know, so much, there's no dearth of prasadam here. It's New Dwarka. Everywhere you look, there's prasadam, right? In fact, you know, you see there's two things, devotees walking across the street with their bead bag and devotees walking across the street with a plate, right? So you constantly see these things. So there's no problem with prasadam. But one should be satisfied with whatever Krishna offers, right? One shouldn't make extra endeavor unnecessarily to gratify the tongue. Of course, you know, it's not that devotees just lay around like pythons, right? In other words, the idea of, you know, here this devotee, you know, this great avadut, he's describing that you should, you know, he's just laying there, and he just lays there, and he's satisfied like that, and he just eats whatever's come. But it's not that we do that necessarily. We accept the essence of what he's saying. We accept the principle. The detail may be different. It's not that, you know, guests come, and there's maybe like 60 of us, we're just lying here on the floor. You know, and then when they walk through the temple room, we go, feed me, you know, and they make their way to the altar, right? You know, so that's not what it's talking about. Rather, it means for our personal sense gratification, for our personal enjoyment, we can handle huge amounts of prasadam, distribute prasadam for Krishna's pleasure, right? We can handle money for Krishna's pleasure, cars for Krishna's pleasure, houses for Krishna's pleasure. All these things can be used for Krishna. But for ourselves, we should be very, very simple. This is sometimes not very easy, right? this is sometimes a struggle, is we have to maintain the simplicity and understand the importance of minimizing the material engagements for ourselves. And really what it comes down to is saving time. We have to look at our time as very valuable, and we should use our time for self-realization, right? And therefore, we shouldn't become distracted into trying to build up things for our so-called material happiness, because it won't work, right? It doesn't work. We have to have faith in that. Not faith in Maya, we should have faith in the scriptures, that these things will not actually work, these plans that are swinging around in our head, it won't actually work. Rather, we have to maintain a simple, humble life, and use our time as much as possible in the service of Krishna. Okay? Now, as far as eating, there may be differences among various devotees. Some devotees may require more, some may require less. Like, for example, it's not that you go to breakfast and all the devotees are just they're just laying there like pythons. You know, you walk in the breakfast hall and all the devotees, instead of sitting down in lines, they're just lying down like this. And then Sachi Tenoi comes, you know, with his bucket, and he puts it right in the mouth. Rather, you'll see devotees have different plates, and they request, you know, give me some of that, give me some of that. But it should be based on health. And the real issue is we should see prasadam as Krishna's mercy. We shouldn't see it as some material thing for our sense gratification. Rather, it should be a meditation. This is why we chant those prayers before eating. It's to put us in a meditative mood. It's not like the countdown until the, you know, the food comes. Rather, it's actually to put us in a mood where we understand that prasadam is Krishna's mercy. It's not for sense gratification. There's one story where Prabhupada, there was one Mataji who she would bring him his plate, you know, and she would take his maha plate out of his room, and it was full of all sorts of wonderful delicacies devotees had made in, with great devotion and love. And so as she would come down the stairs, all these devotees would kind of like pop out of nowhere, you know, and grab something off the plate, right? And by the time, you know, got to the bottom, there's only the things they didn't want, right? And so this Mataji is a little bit disturbed by this, because devotees would sit there, you know, while she's holding the plate and kind of go through and, well, you know, I do want that, and I don't want that, and, you know, I don't want any of that. Right? And so they're kind of looking at it in terms of their sense gratification, right? And so when this came back to Prabhupada, Prabhupada took the plate and he put his hand in and he mixed it all together, you know? So there's the sweet rice is mixed with the sabji and everything like that. He said, okay, now take it. So when the devotees came out and they saw it, they were like, that's okay, I'm full today, right? I've had enough. And so this Mataji, she was very happy because she got to sit down and eat a gigantic plate of Prabhupada's remnants, right? So Prabhupada is teaching us not to look at prasadam, accept it and reject it on the material platform, which is described in the next verse, right? Don't look at it as, you know, for your sense gratification, this is good or bad for my sense gratification, but see it as Krishna's mercy and take whatever is offered to you. Okay? So, it's very interesting because these same points are made in the 11th canto by the Avadhut Brahmana, and maybe someone can say after, in the questions period, it seems like it's the same person. I don't know, but it may, in fact, be the same individual. I'm not sure. But this Paramahamsa being described here was also described as an avadut. There's a similar personality described in the 11th canto. And it's very interesting because this is when Krishna is talking to Uddhava. This is when he's sitting and he's prepared to leave his body, so to speak. He's prepared to transcend or leave this material world. And so in his final moments here, Krishna is actually describing this Brahmana, glorifying this Avadhut Brahmana and his state of consciousness. This is very important because we could see that these qualities, this is actually relishable to Krishna. This is something that Krishna appreciates very much, you know. So that he's actually describing it to Uddhava in the last moments of his pastimes on earth. And so this Avadhut Brahmana makes the same points. And I wanted to read couple of shlokas from there where he mentions this. And to hear the Avadhut Brahmana says in 11.85, Naddeyam nopabhogyam cha lubdhayat yadduka sanchitam bungte tad apitach chanyo madhu evartavin madhu. A greedy person accumulates a large quantity of money with great struggle and pain. But a person who has struggled so much to acquire this wealth is not always allowed to enjoy it himself or give it in charity to others. The greedy man is like the bee who struggles to produce a large quantity of honey, which is then stolen by a man who will enjoy it personally or sell it to others. No matter how carefully one hides his hard-earned wealth or tries to protect it, there are those who are expert in detecting the whereabouts of valuable things, and they will steal it. So there's always going to be somebody looking how to get your money. There's people that meditate like this constantly, and they're very expert at it, whether they be part of the government, or they be, you know, a salesman, or they be a dacoit, right? And just like the beekeeper, you'll see, you ever seen these big boxes? You'll see where the bee, they keep bees. They have these, they look kind of like crates or wooden boxes. And there'll be, you know, sometimes hundreds of them, right? So what they are is they have this little thing that slides down inside, and the bees will actually build their honeycombs around it and put all of their honey in there. And so all he, it's very simple, you know, all he has to do is just walk up, slide the thing out, knock it into a bucket, put it back, right? And then the bees, they spent months, you know, putting all that honey on there, and then it's totally empty. And you can imagine, they come back and they're like, what the heck happened? You know, all the honey's gone, right? And it only took a split second. So in this way, this beekeeper, he's very intelligent how to extract this honey. He's designed this box. They think it's a wonderful place to live. They move in, you know, imagine when the bees first come to the box. They come in and they're like, wow, man, this place is amazing, right? It's clean, it's dark, you know, it's damp. It's everything we could ask for. But they don't know that the entire thing is designed simply to extract the honey. Right? It was created by an intelligent person just to extract it. So similarly, this whole materialistic society we live in now, it's like that bee box. It was created, it was crafted specifically to extract your money. In fact, sometimes they call it human farming, right? Or tax farming. You know, you look at human beings, very intelligent people. They look at human beings and materialists as like sheep. It's like a sheep, you know, they let it grow out its fur, and then you take it and you shear it. You shave off all that. And then, you know, the sheep is sitting there like, ah! And then you just push him out the door, you know, and he thinks, I'm free, you know, I survived. I did it, you know, I went through, I survived tax time, right? And now, you know, April 1st or whatever, you know, April Fool's Day. So, and then they push him out the door, and he's like happy, you know, he's walking around, you know, naked, you know. It's a little chilly, but, you know, it's all right, I'll be fine. And then after a while, he grows, you know, furry again, and again they come and shear him. So this is how people are treated in modern society and society. Even going back, we see to the time of the Avadhut, and to the time of... you know, this Avadhut Brahman, this story is spoken to King Yadu. That's thousands of years ago, right? And also we see this another verse that was mentioned. This is a couple verses before that in the 11th canto. Grasam tu mrishtam virasam mahantam stokam evava yadriksh chayai va patitam grased aja gado kriyaha. Following the example of the python, one should give up material endeavors and accept for one's maintenance food that comes of its own accord, whether such food be delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. If any time food does not come, then a saintly person should fast for many days without making endeavor. He should understand that by God's arrangement he must fast. Thus, following the example of the python, he should remain peaceful and patient. So the same principle is mentioned there by the Avadhut Brahmana. So in conclusion, we should see that this Avadhut Brahmana, not only is he immersed internally in tasting the happiness of Krishna consciousness, because of tasting this happiness, he's not really interested in anything in this material world, but he's not an illusion about the material world either. He clearly sees it for what it is. He clearly sees how things work, and therefore he's not tempted by Maya. So we should also immerse ourselves in Krishna consciousness. We should try to hear and chant about Krishna, preach Krishna consciousness, do service to Krishna, worship Krishna, sing about Krishna, dance to Krishna, right? Absorb ourselves in nothing but Krishna. And when we do this, then Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, then we'll begin to taste the transcendental platform. And when we do that, there'll be no attraction to anything of this world. And simultaneously, the light of Krishna consciousness shining within by Krishna's grace will destroy any ignorance we have about this material world. And therefore, we won't fall into these traps. Rather, we'll live very peacefully, taking as little as possible, endeavoring as little as possible for our own material existence, and absorbing as much as possible in Krishna's service. Thank you very much. And any comments or questions? Yes, sir, Prabhu? Oh, I don't even know. I think it's something like, I mean, it's huge. It's like 20, 30%, something like that. Yeah, yeah. It's 25%, yeah. They just cut it, they cut a whole quarter out of your dollar, right? Of what? 25% of zero. Well, obviously, because they don't connect it to Krishna, it's worthless, you know? So, I mean, it's true. If we don't connect our money to Krishna, it doesn't really matter because it's all worthless. Anything else? Yes, Mataji? Okay, yeah, certainly. I know devotees have tried to do that. The question, of course, was many devotees have various health issues. It's hard for everyone to eat the same prasadam, right? So, yeah, sure, it would be nice if we could have different options that people could eat so that everyone can try as best as possible. It's hard to do that because there's so many different people with so many different needs. But sure, devotees should try to eat healthy, cook healthy. Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.